Welcome to the Jesuit Schools Network Ignatian Inquiry Podcast. The JSN seeks to be a supportive resource to our member schools, and this podcast is designed to be just that, a carved out space to listen, learn, and engage with issues that matter to our collective work as Ignatian educators. We are eager to encourage a spirit of inquiry across the many layers of our work in Jesuit education. We envision our particular brand of Ignatian inquiry to be the art of inquiry as seen through our Ignatian lens, asking questions and exploring issues that matter in our schools through the frame of our shared Jesuit mission. In August of 2023, DeSmet Jesuit became the first Catholic high school in St. Louis to launch an inclusive education program for young men with intellectual disabilities within a typical setting. This program, the first of its kind that we're aware of within the Jesuit Schools Network, prepares students for future jobs and independent living as adults. Students in the Inclusive Education Program at DeSmet will graduate with a modified diploma that mirrors the course requirements of their fellow DeSmet brothers, with the addition of a yearly life skills curriculum to prepare them for adult life. DeSmet Jesuit students play a significant role in achieving this mission, serving as peer mentors for inclusion program students. In today's conversation, we welcome Kevin Polker, principal of DeSmet Jesuit, and Sarah Patton, director of inclusive education at DeSmet, to talk about this remarkable mission-centered program. Kevin Polker has served as the principal of DeSmet Jesuit High School since 2018, bringing over two decades of experience in Jesuit education. Kevin began his career at DeSmet Jesuit in 2002 as a theology teacher. His engagement with students extended beyond academics, taking on roles such as assistant retreat director and head basketball coach. In addition to teaching and coaching, Kevin served as assistant principal for student welfare and discipline, overseeing various student support services, including counseling and formation programs. He is a strong advocate for student welfare, collaborating closely with faculty, staff, and families to create a safe and nurturing environment for all students. Kevin holds a Bachelor of Arts in Philosophy and Religion from Truman State University, a Master of Science in Recreation and Sports Science with an emphasis in coaching education from Ohio University, and a Master of Arts in Educational Leadership from Maryville University. Sarah Patton currently serves as the Director of Inclusive Education at DeSmet Jesuit High School, where she helped build a program for students diagnosed with intellectual disabilities who have Down syndrome. Sarah began her career in 2005 as a special education teacher for the Special School District of St. Louis County at the high school level. For 5 years, she educated students with special needs in several settings, including those with intellectual disabilities, using a life skills curriculum. Sarah then spent 9 years as the hospital school teacher within the Child Life Department at St. Louis Children's Hospital, serving the school-aged population of patients both bedside and within the hospital schoolroom, accessing and learning their curriculums remotely from schools all over the world. Most recently, she spent 2 years as a learning consultant at DeSmet Jesuit High School, differentiating curriculum for students with diagnosed learning needs before her transition into a directorial role in January of 2023. Sarah holds a Bachelor of Science in Communication Science and Disorders from St. Louis University and a Master of Arts in Education from Fontbonne University. She holds Missouri Lifetime Certifications in Cross-Categorical Disabilities and Mild to Moderate Disabilities. Dr. Kristen Ross Kelly, JSN's Director of Educational Inquiry, joins us for this conversation on such an important topic.
Sarah and Kevin, thank you both so much for being here. I've been really looking forward to this conversation. You know, it's wild to think that we're into November, you know, heading towards the holidays, towards Thanksgiving. But how is everything going in St. Louis?
Things are going well. Fall weather's been beautiful. Things are busy, but good.
Terrific. And so tell us a little bit about DeSmet Jesuit. You know, for someone listening who might not really be familiar with just what a wonderful school it is, tell us about it. How would you describe your community?
DeSmet's an all-boys high school, although soon to be middle school and high school in the suburbs of St. Louis. And we're uniquely positioned that we're the second Jesuit high school in our market, which is a little bit different for other markets with Jesuit schools. And at the time that DeSmet opened, we had a little bit higher participation from lay faculty and staff than maybe other Jesuit schools would have experienced. So, and the effect of that has been, I think, we're a school that's always had really strong collaboration with the society because we had eyes on what that might look like. I think that we've always kind of been known as a school that serves a broad range of students and meets them where they're at, and they have a really well-rounded experience. And as a result, one Jesuit told me, he said, DeSmet is the most Jesuit school he's worked in, and he had been in a number of Jesuit schools at the time. And so I think that's kind of who we are and what we do.
I appreciate hearing that. You know, I think over the years, as I've gotten to know about your school, that echoes my experience and what I have always heard too, just the depth of mission across the many layers of school, of your school community. It's special and it's remarkable. And it's one of the reasons why I am excited to have this conversation today to really talk about and to hear the story of what I would describe as an important innovation in mission, and that is the inclusive education program that you have started and that you run. So tell us about how that program came about. You know, what does it look like in your school?
Sure. We really see it as an extension of our service program, which has been kind of a cornerstone, I think, of our student experience here. One of the things that is unique is we have long done our junior projects in a really unique way that our juniors leave campus every Wednesday or Monday afternoon after lunch, and they work with the same site all school year long, really with an emphasis on a unique relationship building that can only come with a pattern of service embedded in an organization like that all year long. And that kind of history, coupled with a rising need in St. Louis in this area, just really sparked us to think about how we can kind of move our service project program in a new direction. And in St. Louis, we have a wonderful foundation, One Classroom, that began about 15 years ago, working with predominantly Catholic paraschools, K-8, to include a wider range of learner and support those schools. And as that program got its feet on the ground and the growing number of students in the program, my paraschool being one of the schools that participated kind of early on, it really tugged at the question of where are these students, and in our case, the young men, where will they go to high school? How will they continue their Catholic education? And we were hearing such wonderful stories about what it did for the school that it really had me thinking, how do we do this? And I think DeSmet, our identity, our charism, is well positioned to have joined this program that One Classroom got started. And as it turns out, one of the early students in my own parish school, his dad's an alum of DeSmet. And when he was in seventh grade, he reached out to me and said, "Hey, can we have a coffee?" And we sat down and he started explaining what he was hoping to see happen. And about 5 minutes in the conversation, I stopped him. I said, "I'm absolutely on board. You don't have to sell me. But I do need a little bit of time to figure out how this could look at DeSmet and to make a proposal." And then that found us in, I think I gave Father O'Dwyer, after he was named president at DeSmet, I think I gave him 3 weeks before I put this in front of him. And just as I had done with the parent, he stopped me short and said, "I'm sold. This is a clear need in our community." And in his words, "This is a place of sin within the Catholic Church historically. So if we can put something together that serves this area, I'm all for it." And he said, "Start putting together what you need and how we can build this and how we articulate it." And that's what led us to Sarah Patton. And I'm excited that she's able to articulate it because she's really living this day to day in a way that nobody else in the building is. And she transitioned from our learning center to being the director of the program. And she started building the curriculum, building the process for how we identify students, and diving into the research for how do we make this work here. And really the only big thing is from the beginning is we had agreed that this peer mentor model, which she'll talk about more, made a lot of sense for us. And so she took the beginnings of ideas and plans that I had in my head and she really put it to life.
You know, even just listening to that, imagining a leader in his home parish hearing about this program that's in the community, it speaks to what a tightly knit community you have there in and around DeSmet, but then kind of dreaming and envisioning what might be possible, even though it looks totally different than anything that's out there. I mean, it's just a testament to not only your belief in the mission of the work that you're doing and that your colleagues are doing it in the school, but also, you know, to just dream beyond maybe what we might have in front of us. I really admire that, Kevin. And then to think that you've seen it through and that here we are, because that was how long ago now?
So that was almost 3 years ago, the initial conversation. January, it'll have been 3 years since I formally sat down and proposed it to Father O'Dwyer. And so we're about 2.5 years into Sarah really actively working on this.
Yeah. And Sarah, so when you first heard about this and you're in a different position within the community, what bring us back to what you were thinking at that time?
Sure. So when we talk about like such a quick turnaround, it really, really was. I remember just in brief conversation, probably in the spring of 2022 with Kevin about this. But then when it really started to get moving, I want to say it was October of 2022. Kevin had the manual from One Classroom about how they kind of model things at the elementary school level as kind of a resource for me. And I was able to reach out to the director of programming over at One Classroom as well. And when we talk about a tight-knit community that St. Louis is, I happened to be tutoring her son at the time after school. And so when I saw the name in the manual, I thought, why do I know this name? And it dawned on me. And I struck up a conversation with her that night when she was picking up her son about what we were trying to do over at DeSmet. And my mother used to call those times in life divine intervention. So she said, if you didn't have your answer, when you have those coincidences, that's your answer. So that quick turnaround really was October. I want to say that encounter happened. And then by December was my decision to go ahead and move forward and take on this role and build this program. So it just seemed like all the puzzle pieces came together and it was meant to be. But my background was working with the population of students who are intellectually disabled. So I kind of actually started out my career after grad school in special education with students with autism and Down syndrome in a high school setting doing life skills programming. So it was kind of a call back to where I started in many ways. So it really, really was, like I said, just one of those things that all came together, really did, at the right time too.
Right, right. No, you can really feel God's hand in every part of that story. And so, Sarah, what exactly is the program? Like, walk us through what a day looks like for a student there.
Sure. So all three current students, two are sophomores, one is a freshman, start their day in homeroom, just like every other student here at DeSmet. I happen to have a sophomore homeroom. So the two inaugural students who are now sophomores, they stay with their class in homeroom all 4 years. And then they kind of each has an individual schedule, just like every other student. So they are in class for 4 periods out in the building for their theology class, their fine arts, their PE or health, and their history course. And then they have their core content with me in a special ed setting. So that's their math, their ELA, and their science, as well as a study hall class. So what study hall looks like freshman and sophomore year is really more those executive functioning skills that we're working on. And this year, I did add a mindfulness piece just to help with that social awareness that sometimes can be difficult for those who are intellectually disabled. So we do little mini lessons on that, social scripts, things like that. So it couldn't be possible, like we mentioned earlier, without those peer mentors. That piece is very important. So our juniors and seniors here at DeSmet have the opportunity at course selection time in February. They hear the little pitch from me in study hall. They get their course selection sheets. It's an actual class that they earn elective credit for under the theology department, and they get an interview. And we ask those questions that we're really looking for guys that would be able to manage helping support these students in the classroom, helping with taking notes, helping with those executive functioning skills, staying organized in their homework planners, and also just building those friendships too. So we do that interview process. I will say from year one to year two, we doubled the amount of applicants and peer mentors from 16 to 32 we've been able to take this year. And of course, I just think that if that doesn't tell you right there the kind of impact a program like this has in a school community, I don't know what does. So these guys really stepped up, and it's just without their support, I don't think obviously we'd be able to do it the way we do it.
And so where did you model that program and structure off of? As far as we know, the program at DeSmet is the only one within the Jesuit Schools Network, but what are the peer schools for this program?
So that peer mentor model I read about in the One Classroom Manual. Now, I think it's been used at probably some public schools as well, but I can't answer that for sure. I just happened to see a version of it or a framework for it in that manual. And I thought, well, we can do this. And I did reach out to a few other programs at different Catholic high schools in the country that were also utilizing a peer mentor model. So as far as its inception and who came up with it and how it initiated, I'm not 100% sure.
We had a great partnership early on before I even had proposed the model in any form here. I had a great conversation with and help from the Fire Foundation in Kansas City, and they pointed me to St. Michael the Archangel High School there in Kansas City. And this is going back maybe 4 years ago, and they gave me a lot of thought starters. It looks a little different how they do it there. When I kind of described our context, they gave me, think about this, think about that. And then, and I forget how I got pointed there, but we got pointed to Pope John Paul II High School outside of Nashville. And Sarah and I ended up going to a visit there, and they have a variation of this. They call it a Hands in Hands program, I believe. And we got to see their version of it play out in a school day and talk to their peer mentors. And ours is a little bit unique compared to theirs even, but those are two places that we certainly got some ideas and assistance from, and they were very, very helpful.
Sure, and learned from. And it won't be interesting to see who will be learning from you with a couple of years under your belt here with this program. I do think about what comes next. Can you describe the reaction at school and in the community to this?
Yes, I began the discussion with our academic department chairs, and I had prepared all kinds of notes and information, and I brought it to the department chairs for a meeting, and I was geared up for a really long, hard discussion. And after I laid out the basic idea of what I was thinking, you know, and that what it might look like, the room was silent. And finally, a couple of veteran teachers spoke up and said, I don't have questions about whether we should do it. I have questions about how do we do this and how do we, you know, transition it. And that sentiment was echoed from the majority of the voices in the room. And so that was the first window in. Then we presented it next to our board of trustees and gave them an update about a program we were working on. And again, silence and simply a matter of this is really exciting and keep us up to date. And certainly some questions, you know, curiosity questions, but no questions about does this align with our mission? Should we be doing this? It was more a matter of, hey, give us some more answers as to how, but really strong support, you know, from the board, strong support internally. And then we did Father O'Dwyer and I scheduled a virtual town hall after we sent a note out to the community that we were doing this. And at the town hall, no resistance questions, a lot of support and a lot of curiosity and a lot of please tell us more, some offers of how can I help, but really was kind of astounded by how well it was received. And that's pretty much been the story since, that tell us more about it. This is really interesting, or thank you for doing this kind of questions, or when can my son get involved, to really exciting encounters where, you know, families calling the admissions department and saying, I never thought my two sons could be in the same school. And we're really, really excited to learn more about DeSmet because this had never been on our radar before because we didn't think they could be at the same Catholic school. And there's all kinds of other stories along those lines, but it quickly turned from questions of why to how.
Sure. It's like another step in the affirmation that you're doing the right thing, like Sarah mentioned, when everything was aligning. And starting with that initial conversation that you had, Kevin, with the academic departments and the program, were you expecting more questions about how it might change the academic program? Or like, what were you thinking heading into that?
You know, I didn't know what specifically, but I just expected greater resistance. And it would be misleading to say there wasn't nervousness. You know, one of the things that came up quickly was teachers that were nervous. This felt really new. They didn't question whether or not it was a good decision from a mission standpoint, but just these questions of what I don't know. And, you know, that we're dealing with students with some increased risk factors. I don't want to be a part of doing something wrong or hindering their growth or in any way messing this up. So the nervousness was around, you know, and a good faculty want to be successful, right? And so, and they want their students to be successful. So it was a lot more questions about making sure they felt like they had what they needed to be successful.
Well, and it's like that speaks to the like inherent goodness of your faculty, you know, wanting to do it right. And also that just the value on the relationship between the adults and the kids. And we have such high expectations for that and for the power of it. And so you want to do that with, you want to be able to, you know, uphold that with all of your students. It speaks to the goodness of the folks that you work with. What about the reaction amongst the kids, amongst the boys? I think that to me, I imagine I'm hearing it through what you're sharing, but describe that for us.
I mean, I think it's improved both their social, just overall social and emotional health. You know, teenage boys as teenage girls, very egocentric just by where they are in their social and emotional development. So it really got them to, I think, get outside their own heads a little bit and make those connections, seeing that despite the fact that these students do have intellectual disabilities, they're very much same worries, same concerns as I do. The day-to-day just school life balance, you know, that we're more similar than we are different. And so I just feel like all around it's given them an opportunity to live that in real life and not, like I said, I had started my career in the public schools. And I felt when I was there, you know, you always had good students, good eggs that wanted to get to know the students that I worked with and be a part of their day-to-day life. But it was very separatist the way it was, you know, we were in the same classroom, but a lot of times doing separate work. Even during unstructured times at lunch, we sat at a separate table. Whereas this so far, a year and a half in, there really is none of that. And I think it just, it kind of helps preventing those, you know, misnomers or any stereotypes because they get to know each other and they get to learn together and they get to eat lunch together and just know each other as people.
I think you're really showing to the students in your care, to all the students, like what a culture of inclusivity looks like, you know, as opposed to just telling the value of being inclusive. You're really showing it to them and you're building, you know, every day with this kind of work. You know, with that in mind, what has surprised you? Kevin, maybe you answered that a little bit earlier with the academic piece, but what's been the biggest surprise to you? Maybe what were you not expecting?
Well, I wasn't expecting Aiden to hit a half court shot and end up on ESPN.
It is his favorite thing to do.
It is. You know, and even this year, Peter, our other sophomore, is a member of the swim team and has provided an opportunity, I think, for him to mature, that he's having to navigate staying even longer. I mean, the school day, especially in a student's first year, Ms. Patton can speak to this very acutely, is it's really challenging their skills and their maturity. And there's a lot of growing up, and especially the first semester, and to see 1 year later, a student participating on a team and in seeing how proud he is to say that he's a member of the swim team and to compete at meets and what the team has had to do to make that work as well. That's been really neat to see. It's one of the things you hoped would happen, but I wasn't sure. And it's been really neat. And then I would say the other side of it is I've been lucky enough to be in the classroom last year and this year with a freshman theology class. And so I had students in the program in my class last year and this year to see the peer mentors at work and to just see these juniors and seniors who, some of whom I would have never would have thought to apply. And I think this also speaks to Sarah's preparation and support for these guys. To see their active presence and the problem solving, they're leaning on me way less as a teacher than I expected. I expected those juniors and seniors to lean on, and they picked up on cues in the first 2 or 3 weeks and how I operate, and they really take ownership of that peer mentor role. And then the other piece that's been surprising is to see the students rising to the academic challenge. I found the assessments that I had designed for them were too easy. I had the peer mentors coming to me and say, well, okay, well, we finished this already. And it was kind of easy for him. And I went, oh, okay, I've got to level up some of what I have prepped. So that has been really neat to watch, that the peer mentors really take ownership, but then the students elevating their social as well as academic skills.
I agree with that in the sense that as far as their ability levels, these boys, despite the diagnosis of intellectually disabled, they surprise me every day, just their skill level sometimes. I mean, even as a special ed teacher, and this is all I've ever done and all I ever have known in my career, they'll come in sometimes and we'll be reading a passage and have to go back and answer comprehension questions. I'm going, okay, I need to go back and reread that paragraph. And they'll just spot off the answer like that. And we could have read 5 paragraphs of information. And I'm thinking, wow, you picked up that better than I did. So, you know, sometimes it's just those little everyday surprises in that regard, but also to what Kevin said just about the peer mentors. You know, I'm the mother of 3 teenage boys. So, you know, you kind of go in thinking, okay, I think I know what to expect. And each and every one of them these peer mentors have surprised me so much with their maturity, their ability to know in the moment, you know, this is probably going to work, but this might not work. So I'm going to approach it this way. And the real overall maturity, I have to say, from all of them.
You know, Sarah, as I listen to you, I think about, you know, many years ago and kind of over the years in schools, I also started as a counselor, and thinking about the numbers of conversations I had with families where you really kind of have to say, no, we can't do this accommodation. No, we can't do this modification. We don't have the ability of this. We don't have the capability. And to think about the surprise that you have of the kids that are there really being able and equipped to do the work, you know, you're showing what's possible when you do take a risk at the beginning. You know, it's just a risk in the beginning. And then the more the program gets embedded in the community, it feels more like a part of it. But I think back to the old days, how far this has come. Now, what about when you think about the teachers and the maybe the curiosities, as you said, Kevin, from the beginning that they might have had? Flash forward to now, and what are the teachers saying, and how are they feeling about this? I sense there's a lot of really a spark of the mission again within your community. But what are you hearing?
I would defer a little bit to Sarah with that, because I sometimes worry that people feel pressure to tell me a little bit, you know, what I want to hear as principal. And I think Sarah's closer to it. She gets a little bit more of those anxious questions from teachers. And so I would defer to her here.
I would have to say, for the most part, you know, I created a training just for teachers prior to the school year, even starting, just a little bit of background knowledge on intellectual disabilities, but also how they best learn, what kind of strategies have been proven to work best, how they, you know, are overall visual learners. So how does that look? How can we take your content and make it more accessible to them, for them to be able to understand it and take it in and learn it? But then throughout, just organically through the school year, you know, I check in, you know, what can I do? How can I help? What more do you need from me, kind of thing? Most have kind of taken the training, taken the supplementals I've given them, and we're off and running. And then they stop and just come by my room during their plan period and say, hey, I've got this project coming up, or maybe this type of assessment. Can we look at this together? And how might this be better for these students to show what they know? You know, so aside from maybe some more help with behavior strategies sometimes, as these students can dig their heels and absolutely just stop working sometimes, it's been, I think, more collaboration in that regard, just so we know how to redirect appropriately. The peer mentors know how to redirect appropriately, but also notice those cues that these students give when they're kind of reaching their threshold, you know. So it just could be a matter of laying my head down on a desk and, okay, the peer mentor knows, or the teacher might notice that and say, you know, maybe go take a walk or take a break. But I think the staff as a whole, we just keep those lines of communication open all the time. And they know that I answer emails pretty late in the night. I probably shouldn't do that. But even if they're finally at home, sitting down, looking at something and shoot me an email, they know that I'll get back to them as, you know, either that night or first thing, 6 a.m. the next morning. So we make sure that we're always talking with one another and encouraging. Always remind them, you are doing a fabulous job. Remember that. I know it may not seem like it in the moment, but just the fact that you opened your heart and your mind to do this, you know, these boys are just so happy to be here. I mean, they really are. They tell me every day, I'm happy to be a Spartan. I'm happy to be a Spartan. First thing in the morning when they walk in, I'm a Spartan. I'm happy to be a Spartan, you know, so it really is sweet.
Well, and it sounds like that kind of layer of support, you know, for the students. And then it extends, of course, to the teachers and to the faculty as well, that that's really an important part of the program. I also really appreciate the willingness to learn as you go, which I think is part of, if I had to look at the leadership that it takes to get a program like this started from the very beginning, to me, I would use the word, it's brave. You know, it's very courageous to take a leap of faith for a community in a very public way, you know, in an important way, and to see what happens and to do your preparation and have all your ducks in a row to make a great program, but to also collectively understand that we are learning as we go. I really admire that.
That is the absolute truth. That is the, I mean, they've been so supportive of me, and anything that I'm thinking about doing or I want to start, they just say, let us know what you need, you know, whether it's time, materials, just let us know and we'll try to bring it to fruition. I mean, they just have been great.
And on that point, I would be remiss not to compliment our parents here as partners, the parents of our students in the program. They have been very, very encouraging and supportive of the fact that this is a new endeavor. There's going to be some bumps in the road and that we'll figure it out together. And each family in their own way has really been a good partner in understanding that and helping us really figure this out as we go.
So if you were someone listening to this, a teacher or a leader around the JSN, you know, someone listening into our conversation here, what do you think they can learn from your experience? What are the key takeaways as you have a little bit of perspective now to look back?
Just to let go and trust. I know that's overused a lot, but sometimes, you know, when you can't see the forest through the trees and you're taking on something that you've never done before, and yeah, there's going to be hiccups and things that don't go the way you thought they would, and you have to pivot and plan something different. But just knowing and trusting that it's all going to work out, even if you can't see how that looks on the other end. And when you see it every day amongst the student body in the school community, just the sense of belonging, just the sense of acceptance of differences, just the tolerance that teenage boys, they're learning a tremendous sense of patience working with students that are intellectually disabled. And you just know you're doing the right thing. It just feels right.
I think I would say bigger picture, whether it's particular student population that we're working with here or whether it would be some other similar program, to lean into your school's identity and to do what you can. You know, that part of what I think we had to recognize was we can't build a program for 100 students. And for this to work within kind of our existing school and personality, we needed to design it in a certain way. And that leaves us at times having to tell some families that unfortunately what their son needs doesn't fit with the resources we have available. But I would encourage a school to think about how could they stretch themselves, but still really lean into who they are and what resources they have. I think every school could do something, but I think each school is going to have to probably do it a little bit differently and maybe serve a different population. But I think there's something in this area that I think all schools could do.
That is probably the best way to conclude our conversation, you know, to think about the summary of belonging and difference and building the culture of inclusivity, and to use the language that I used to kick off the conversation about this really innovative mission program, and to think about, as Kevin said, leaning into your school's identity. I think there's something in there that all of us across the network, I think, can learn from. So thank you very much for taking the time to share. I'll look forward to a follow-up in a couple of years of how it's going, how it's grown, you know, what you'll continue to learn. But I really admire you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ignatian Inquiry Podcast. You can find additional resources from the episode on JSN's website at jesuitschoolsnetwork.org/inquiry/podcast. The Ignatian Inquiry Podcast is hosted by Dr. Kristen Ross Cully. This episode was recorded, edited, and produced by Kristen Smith. To learn more about the Jesuit Schools Network, please visit jesuitschoolsnetwork.org. Stay curious and set the world on fire.